President Biden brushed off a worse-than-expected jobs report today. Instead, he pointed to other signs that the economy is on the upswing. And last night, Congress did avoid a government shutdown that could have hit the economy hard. Here's Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking on the nearly empty Senate floor.
I'm happy to let the American people know the government remains open.
Let's get to it all with our Friday Politics Roundtable. Chad Pergram is a congressional correspondent for Fox News. Hi, Chad.
Gentlemen.
And Maya King is a national politics reporter for Politico. Hi there, Maya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you. You two must be happy to not be covering a shutdown this weekend. Three Republican senators were threatening to shut down the government at midnight tonight. They were saying they would block a stopgap spending agreement if they didn't get a vote on an amendment that would strip funding for President Biden's workplace vaccine requirements. Here's Utah's Republican Senator Mike Lee.
I'm not against the vaccine. In fact, I've gotten the vaccine. My family's gotten the vaccine. I've encouraged people to get the vaccine. I am against the mandate.
Okay, but Chad, Republicans ultimately backed down from the shutdown. What happened?
Well, the problem here is that you had a supermajority of senators, both sides of the aisle, who were willing to fund the government. They did not want to close the government here. And, you know, I often say on Capitol Hill, it comes down to the math. You know, Republicans and Democrats had the math to beat back a filibuster on this. The government would have shut down, though, because it was an issue in this instance of time. The government was funded through 11-59-59 tonight. And if you had Senator Lee and you had Roger Marshall of Kansas and Ted Cruz of Texas, if they went to the mat and used every parliamentary artifice available to them, they could have stretched this out through early Wednesday morning, next Wednesday. The government would have been shut down for 4 days. But there were ultimately the votes to do this. Now, as you say, they got this vote about, getting rid of the vaccine mandates, the federal vaccine mandates. They didn't have the math on their side there. The vote there, there were only 48 votes in favor of that. All Republicans, even if Republicans were able to force a tie vote 50-50, it would have failed. A 50-50 vote by rule loses in the Senate. And you know, obviously, Vice President Harris isn't going to cast a vote there. But Republicans had an attendance problem. They had two senators, John Thune of South Dakota, the whip, was absent, and also Bill Hagerty, Republican of Tennessee. So they didn't even have that on their side. But they got their vote. They were able to make this a political issue, though.
Okay, but what's the longer-term outlook here, Maya? Because this deal gets us to the middle of February. Can we get a deal to fund the government for the rest of the fiscal year, or are we going to be right back here at the brink in a couple of months?
Well, if we know anything about how this Congress operates and the ways even just looking at this week, how things kind of shook out, I imagine we will kind of be back here with this same kind of jostling. But, you know, even then, what's at the heart of this was President Biden's vaccine mandate. And that's really what I think shook a number of Republicans in the Senate who wanted to try to kind of drag this out. And I think that Senator Kennedy said it really well in talking with my colleagues, the flame was not worth the candle on this one. And so if we do find ourselves in the same position again, where Congress has to vote on funding and perhaps the Republicans find, you know, another reason to kind of step back from this or try to create, you know, the same kind of crisis, they'll have to have a good reason, I think, for doing it. And whether that's vaccine mandates next March or any number of other provisions that they might decide to find, like, this is, I think, what it would come down to, is an issue that's big enough to get enough Republicans behind it to be willing to shut the government down and take that political risk, quite frankly.
Can I make
I'm
a point here real quick about the government funding
please.
Here?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the fiscal year started October 1st. Basically, what Democrats are doing by now having voted for and put into place two temporary spending measures, they are running on old Trump-era money. So far, even though Democrats control the House, the Senate, and the White House, they have not implemented their own spending priorities. When you re-up the government funding in what's called a CR, a continuing resolution, you just re-up all the funding at the existing levels here. So Democrats, even though they have the majorities in Congress, they are not spending on their priorities yet. And this is why Republicans, they wanted this interim spending bill to run through March. Democrats were pushing for mid to late January. They settled on February 18th. So this is interesting. The Democrats are not getting their spending priorities in place because of this stopgap bill.
Chad, I was going to say, I'm still trying to get over the fact that you said, I think there was a supermajority in the Senate, which I didn't know that existed these days. Let's move on. President Biden is trying to put a positive spin on today's jobs report, which, you know, frankly, didn't reflect the concerns over the new Omicron coronavirus variant. The report showed employers added just 210,000 jobs in November. That's fewer than half of the jobs added in October. Let's listen to the president.
Families are anxious. They're anxious about COVID. They're anxious about the cost of living, the economy more broadly. They're still uncertain. I want you to know I hear you.
Maya, he kind of has to be listening on this issue, doesn't he? Democrats, their future's kind of hanging on the economy.
Yeah, and it's front of mind for voters. And if it hangs on like this, it will be the number one issue of next year's midterms, where Democrats are already going into with a pretty steep battle. So especially around the holiday season, in a period of inflation, as the president points out, it would be helpful to him and many in his party to point out the fact that this is a really hard time for folks. And it has been, it seems, for this administration, kind of a one step forward, one and a half steps back kind of time. You saw kind of towards the fall, COVID waning, vaccines going up, and folks being able to get back outside, the economy improving. And now here we are heading into the Christmas and holiday season here. Now you're seeing sort of a return of the variant. People are concerned about that. And unemployment numbers are a little bit more disappointing, I think, than folks had hoped. But there are still some numbers that many have pointed out to me here that can show a little bit of proof of life, both for the economy and for this administration. And that's the unemployment rate, which still remains low, and the labor participation numbers, which still remain pretty high. So I think looking at this, you know, as a full picture, it's not excellent. It's not, I think, the best place that anybody would want to be in, and that this president or his administration would quite want to be in heading into the holiday season. But it's also definitely not the worst position they could be in either.
Yeah. Chad, yes, the economy is going to be central in next year's midterms. But what about something else? This historic abortion hearing at the Supreme Court this week. How's that going to shake up politics for both parties in the months ahead?
Well, you know, we probably won't get a ruling on this until the spring or even the summer. This could help shape the election, you know, as you go into the 2022 midterms. Of course, we heard a lot about that when Amy Coney Barrett was nominated just before the election for 2020. And trying to divine out what, you know, in the oral arguments and the body language of the justices and the types of questions is very, very hard. Obviously, the Supreme Court seems to be a little more disposed to maybe doing something with Roe versus Wade here, but we just don't know. I mean, we heard those arguments that they might, you know, try to get rid of Obamacare, and that happened twice, and that never really worked out for the Republicans. Right. So, you know, it could be a key issue right there, but Democrats could, again, use that issue. There are these two or three lightning rod issues on both sides of the aisle which energize the base, and certainly Democrats will use that if they really dig into Roe.
Let's get out of Washington for a moment, shall we? We got a lot of news there in the Beltway, but also looking out to the states. You know, the parties are watching very closely these big gubernatorial races. And one of the big announcements this week is that Stacey Abrams is going to take another crack at Georgia's governor's mansion. She was on CNN this morning talking about why, even if she hasn't actually conceded losing in 2018.
My responsibility is to do what I can to ensure that no matter who you are and no matter who you choose, that you have the freedom to vote in the United States. And that is why we have to keep laser focused on the assault on our democracy.
So Maya, how central is her bid in Georgia to Democrats' broader hopes in 2022?
Well, it's certainly on a number of levels represents, I think, the best of Democrats' hopes. People knew in Georgia and really across the country, they had a good idea that Abrams would be building out or shaping up a rematch against Governor Brian Kemp. But Georgia has quickly become now central not only to the political universe, but also an example of kind of what's happening more broadly in American politics right now. Not only would Abrams make history as the first Black woman governor, representing a party that professes to value diversity, but you also have her going up against some serious headwinds, the biggest of those being this new and largely untested voting law passed by Georgia state legislature that would place considerable limits on folks' access to the ballot, not just through absentee voting, but ballot drop boxes, even limits on smaller things like who can serve and like water and snacks to voters who are waiting in line. And these are things that Democrats are really paying closer attention to because it's not just happening in Georgia, but it's happening in states across the country. I think, though, that Abrams having become kind of this symbol of voter mobilization and also, of course, flipping the state blue in 2020 and sort of opening up this opportunity for Democrats to win in places where they didn't think possible. Her race exemplifies a number of efforts by the party that have been building now for many years.
Yeah, and on the other side of things, Republicans are probably taking note of the fact that Charlie Baker in Massachusetts says he's not running for re-election, a moderate Republican, a Trump critic. Maya King, national politics reporter for Politico, and Chad Pergram, congressional correspondent for Fox News. Thanks to you both. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Thank you.